there is several people wrote about it before me, but then that's.
Oh, thank you very much. Oh, okay. All right. First inning is the general background. We'll be talking 19th century baseball. We'll be talking about Lizzie. We'll be talking about women in baseball. So, Lizzie was born Elizabeth Stride. Actually, Arlington was the name she adopted when she pitched. In Mahanoy City, those of you not from near here, Mahanoy City's up between Hazleton and Pottsville in the coal regions of Pennsylvania, the anthracite regions. They've seen better days up there now. She was born in 1877, six children. She was the youngest of Henry and Mary Stride. Mahanoy City was a thriving small borough at the time. The coal regions were very busy in the late 19th century because people used coal, not so much nowadays. And that's what it looked like. In Mahanoy City was the Stride Hotel. The Strides had emigrated from England. Henry Stride was the proprietor. That's a picture of the hotel, and there's a tap room in any hotel in Pennsylvania. That's why they call them hotels. Tough business. Mary dies when Lizzie's 8. Henry remarries. Lizzie's stepmother dies when she's 15. Lizzie has 3 brothers and her father, keeping her occupied and active with sports. She is in the middle there. By the time she was 11, she was giving skating exhibitions in Pennsylvania that she was a celebrity. She also was an expert skeet shootist. She was a great polo player and equestrian. Those are not Lizzie around. That's what ladies looked like back then when they did those things. And also, she was the first woman to ride a bicycle in Mahanoy City that turned the heads. She also, when she was 17, develops an interest and proficiency with the help of her father in baseball, and she becomes a bloomer girl. We'll talk about that. That's Lizzie later on, what advertising brochures on being a bloomer girl. Digressing a bit, baseball is all about digressing. Third inning, other players from Mahanoy City, there's a bit of a tradition there. Born in Mahanoy City were Joe Boley of the Connie Mack Championship A's of the late 20s and very early 30s, and Joe Dugan, third baseman on the great Yankee teams in the 20s. He was born in Mahanoy City, Dugan was, moved to Connecticut where he did most of his accomplishments, but during the 20s, somebody from Mahanoy City was playing in the World Series every game except for 1921 and 25. Between Dugan and Boley, they were born in Mahanoy City. William Matthews, out of Mahanoy City, had a cup of coffee with the Boston Red Sox. The most famous thing is he played for the Reading Pretzels in 1907-1908 from Reading. Ron Northey was a journeyman outfielder for 15 years. He's famous for two things, at least I think so. Twice he was traded for Harry Walker. He played for the Phillies. And also, he has more home runs than anybody named N in the history of the Phillies. They had a thing in the Daily News a week or two ago. Another connection with Mahanoy City is Clementina Brida. She comes over from Italy. Her brother's in Mahanoy City. She spends some time with him. She gets interested in baseball. She becomes a bloomer girl. Takes the name Maud Nelson as her playing name as a bloomer girl. We'll talk about her in a little bit. Okay, who were the bloomer girls? Bloomer girl, bloomer girl. You say in the second from the left in the front row, isn't that Maud Nelson? Yes, it is. That's the Western bloomer girls. They were groups of women that would tour the United States. And there was hundreds of them. They had all kinds of different geographical names. They barnstormed, and they would have 2, sometimes 3 men on a team. Sometimes the men would dress in wigs, too. Rogers Hornsby got his very early start playing with the Bloomer Girl team. So did Smokey Joe Wood. You say, why were they called Bloomer Girls? It's because they were bloomers. Bloomers were what? That's Lizzie again. On the right and to the left is Amelia Bloomer, who invented bloomers. That's why they call them bloomers. you know, either that or she changed her name. Okay. All right. Moving on here. Let's, again, we go back to that temporary Mahanoit, Maud Nelson. Barbara Gregorich, author of Women at Play, calls her the most important influence on Bloomer Girl baseball during its existence. Maud, 40 years, she was a Bloomer person all the way through. She played, she pitched, she was an infielder, she coached, she scouted, she owned teams. Her shtick when she would play, she would pitch the first two or three innings, strike out everybody, and then move over to third base, and then play flawlessly at third base. In 1908, she was known as the greatest all-around female ball player in existence. Okay, she owned a team with her first husband, John Olson. He died. She got another husband. She bought another team, and they played until 1934. Okay, fifth inning. Elizabeth Stride becomes Lizzie Arlington and the men who helped her. First, we have Happy Jack Stivitz out of Ashland, PA. I won't show another map, but it's about 15 miles from Mahanoy City is where Ashland is. Big hill right up the middle of town. He was a great pitcher and an outfielder during the 1890s with the Boston Bean Eaters were his primary team. I said Braves and excuse the typo. Anyway, he won 30 games twice, 20 games six times. The Bean Eaters under Frank Sele, pardon my typing error there, their manager, won four pennants. And anyway, he taught Lizzie throwing, worked on her proficiency with throwing. His career ended last year as a professional ball player. The Cleveland Spiders, he was done, but they needed bodies. And so they paid him to have a body. And he hit 204 or 205, 0-4 as a pitcher. The Spiders set a record in baseball with losses. He was not Happy Jack that year, I'm sure. Okay, Lizzie is becoming a Bloomer girl, and she catches the eye of Captain William Connor in Philadelphia. There's no photos I could find, so I just approximated the best I could. He's known as well-known in sporting and theatrical circles out of the Enquirer, and he pays Lizzie $100 a week to finish the baseball season. He's going to manage her. He sees millions in her and kind of has the philosophy, if Lizzie pitches, they will come. That's what he's hoping. And Lizzie at this time is when she adopts the name Arlington. She says it sounds more British, and that must mean it's glamorous, because we can see how glamour and Britain are synonymous. One out of those three. I had to get Elizabeth Hurley in here somewhere. Okay, all right. So Lizzie's debut is pitching for the Philadelphia Reserves against the Richmond Baseball Club. What happens? We have a female athlete. She appears. It's a historic occasion. What do we do first? The Enquirer checks her out. She's 5 feet, stockily built, brown hair, brown eyes, brown hair. All that stuff. Getting to her performance, she doesn't do bad. 4 innings, 6 hits, 300 runs. She plays second base, gets 2 hits off former major leaguer Mike Kilroy. The Reserves win 18-5. The Reserves win. The number that really counts is only 500 show up to the game. Captain Connor says, adios, amigo Lizzie. And she's a free agent again. Not enough people. So who goes next is Ed Barrows, the president of the Atlantic League. He's always trying to generate, it's a low-level league, attendance. He would reach into a showman's bag of tricks. In 1896, he gets the Willington Peaches to put up lights. 2,500 people show to there, 2,300 show to the game. The Peaches fold up at the end of the year anyway, but he gets Jim Corbett, John Sullivan, heavyweight champions to umpire games. People don't care about the game, they want to watch the umpires. He calls Lizzie a new dash of Tabasco and decides he's going to have her play for different teams in the Atlantic League. And the first team she signs with is those Reading Coal Heavers for a July 5th game. Denny Long's comments we don't have. He was the manager of the Cole Reavers. So we get to the sixth inning, the big game. Cole Reavers are in third place. The Allentown Peanuts, who they're going to play, are in eighth place in the Atlantic League. A few Cole Reavers of note, got to be brief here. Scott Stratton's better days are behind him, as are George Ulrich's. They were in the majors for times. Jim Cockman, the shortstop, would have some time in the future. The pitcher, Ned Garvin, would have some time in the major leagues in the future. And the catcher, Mike Hayden, also had a fairly decent major league career, most of it after that. So you had some talent on that Cole Reaver team. On the Allentown Peanuts, thy name is Delahanty. Ed Delahanty's three brothers, there was five Delahantys that would play in the majors. Ed, of course, is the Hall of Fame great Philly player. Joe, Jim, and Tom shored up the middle of the Peanuts defense. Frank didn't play on the Peanuts. And one other former major leaguer, that Ollie Smith, played for the Peanuts. Lizzie gets to the game. Up comes a carriage with two white horses. That was not the carriage. A thousand people are there to see her. She lifts her hat. Everybody's happy. They're hooray. What does the paper do again? They check her out. They check out. She has a pretty face, rosy cheeks, gray uniform, jaunty cap, and they check her hair out too, latest fashion. So we got all that aside. Now let's get to how she warms up. She takes ground balls. She's okay taking ground balls. But the daisy cutters, as they said, the hot ones, were taken by the second baseman, Ulrich. But she makes neat throws. And she even spits on her hands like a pro. Well, isn't that something? Okay. The Cole Reavers have a 5-0 lead. They lift the pitcher, and in comes Lizzie. It's Lizzie's ninth. She takes the mound. Makes it look easy. First two batters are out. Next, Charlie Seagrave singles, Jim Delahanty singles, and Charlie Boyle walks, loading the bases, but Lizzie gets George Cleave to pop out to third. Had him all the way. Cole Reavers win. Good for Lizzie, shrieks the crowd. It's kind of like an ode to joy at the end of the ninth. Okay. She shakes hands with a number of fans and load the bases, end the game with a win, like the old days with Brad Lidge back here in Philly. That was a long time ago, it sure seems like. Okay. Did I say he didn't make any trades? Right. Okay. The press afterwards. The Reading Eagle is tough. It's the evening paper, you know. They have more time to be critical. The headline, female pitcher would not do against heavy hitters. Viewed as she doesn't have speed, she has poor control, but still for a woman, she's okay. And they make a note that says, she got $50 for one single inning. And Jonathan Papelbon says, your point is? Okay. So the Reading Times is a little more charitable. They are objective, woman in the box. They said two hits, but yeah, you know, whatever, they won the game. And she had movements, and all she needs is speed to help her. And Jamie Neuer says, who needs speed? Okay, seventh inning, we got to talk real quick. After the Cole Reavers, she's moving to another team, the Hartford Cooperatives. They don't want to play with her. They said, we're going to lose the game. Nobody else in the Atlantic, two things happened. Nobody wanted to play with her, and they had lousy pre-sales with the Gates. Lizzie wasn't as big a draw as they hoped. Ed Barrow releases her from her contract. She joins a lady baseball club out of Ohio, has its own railroad car. She gets joint billing. This is the actual billing from that. I keep using that. Great story. The team after that she plays with is the Cincinnati Reds. They're in San Francisco. The owner runs off with the money. She gets the team to play all the way back to New York by arranging games. And there's money left over, so people have money to go home. So, anyway, she also becomes post-Reading Cole Reavers' Mrs. Warner, Lizzie Stride Warner. She marries George Warner in Mahanoy City. They move to Philly. He is a bartender. She stops being Lizzie Arlington when she plays. She's still very active with athletics. George dies in 1913, and Lizzie becomes a purchasing agent. Lizzie's progeny, very quickly, women otherwise than Lizzie in the game. Jackie Mitchell strikes out Babe Ruth, strikes out Lou Gehrig in an exhibition game. Kennesaw Mountain Landis voids the contract. Three women, yeah, what a pickle puss. Three women pitch in the, one of whom is a native Philadelphian, in the 50s in the Negro League. They were somewhat of a novelty, but they pointed out that they got thrown at sometimes. Men didn't like them playing there. Eleanor Engel of Harrisburg is signed as a shortstop with the Harrisburg Senators in 1952. However, Picklepuss George Troutman voids that contract as well. And Eleanor says, he threw me a curve. She says, even though I signed a contract, I didn't play. I'm not going to expect money. I'm not that kind of girl. Edith Houghton out of Philadelphia scouted for the Phillies in 1946 to 52. She just died in February, a lady with a lot of stories. Illa Borders, the first woman to get an NCAA scholarship, wins a game for the Duluth Dukes in the Northern League. Right now we have Eri Yoshida. She signs with the Chico Outlaws in the North American Baseball League. Now she's with the Strong Warriors of Maui, Nawakoa Ikaiuke Maui, in the Pacific Association of Baseball Clubs. She 3 years, 7.62 ERA. If you want to keep up with her, she does have a blog, and that's so there. So now we're the ninth inning. All right, the ninth inning. Ed Barrow, first postscript, ninth inning. He manages, after the Atlantic League folds in 1900, he goes to the Tigers, he manages the Red Sox, they win a championship, Babe Ruth's on the team, 1919, he's not on the team. He goes to Harry Frazee and says, I think you're making a mistake. Anyway, he goes to the Yankees in 1921, running the front office, he retires in 46, it works out pretty well, 15 pennants, 10 World Series championships. He gets in the Baseball Hall of Fame in 53. Plaque in Yankee Stadium is on the left. Plaque in the Hall of Fame is on the right. Two big players, Redding and Allentown. They have their entry, one scene for them with Lizzie's game. Then they go on, like Rosencrantz and Guldenstern. What happens to them? The Cole Hebers are in third place. The Peanuts are in eighth place. They have franchise troubles. Bottom line, Redding drew 400,000 plus last year. Allentown drew more than 600,000. Rosencrantz and Guldenstern are not dead. Okay, the last. Our leading lady dies in 1919. She was 42, very young. Complications. Her obit remembers in the Mahanoy paper her being a generous person besides somebody with great accomplishments on the diamond. And Ed Barrow says, you know what, I really should have judged her on talent. Nowadays, this is 50 years later, she'd be good enough to get in the game. Barbara Grigorich called her a champion for all seasons, a woman with a charitable nature. I can't think of anything better than as an epigraph than that. She's gone, the Cole Hebers and the Peanuts are gone, but we have always the box score on the Hall of Fame wall. That's it. Any questions?
We have a few minutes if anyone has any questions.
Does anybody want... Oh, go ahead.
This is a comment, not a question.
Yes, yes.
I was a fan of Ron Dorothy of Baton Rouge City, so I'm glad I heard
that. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yes, yes.
Dean Moore, obviously for another time, but about that tour that where they had they just kind of put the money, they had to tour back. That would be a great story to hear from
us. Yeah, indeed. And there's not as much on Lizzie, and that was in her obit that was written about. That's where I got that from. It wasn't, no. Anyway, just a 1 second thing. Does anybody know why the Cleveland Spiders were so bad? Yeah. Yeah, why am I asking that here? I read Dave Voigt's book about, the owner moved all the good players to one team, and he left the dogs in Cleveland. They didn't even have any home games the second half of the season. It's hilarious. That's why Major League was in Cleveland. Okay, thank you very much.